Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the entertainment world. My guest today is musician Scott Fisher. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon.
Let's start at the beginning, because I've always found that starting at the beginning is a good place. Who is Scott Fisher? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a Chicago native, lived here for the most part of my life, and been heavily involved in music ever since high school, and I've been really trying to push forward with my original music since right thereafter, and actually through high school as well, but really working on this type of a project since about 94, so quite a while now.
Okay, a personal question, but you're a guy, and guys don't usually object to being asked. How old are you?
That's a great question. As a matter of fact, I'm terrible at that. My brother and I both have an ongoing dialogue where we have to ask one another how old we are. I believe I'm 36 or 37. I was born in 75, so in November, so I believe 36.
Okay. Sorry for the personal intrusion there. Okay. Your band is running under the name Fisher's Flicker. And you have a new CD out. By the way, I love the title, Catman Don't. Where on earth did you come up with the title?
You know, I over the years and through previous releases that I've done, I've always had a lot of humor involved with what I've done. And there wasn't anything funny, per se, on this new album. So I had this realization. There was never a, that wasn't the goal that I had in mind. But when I sat down and realized, you know, with the completed songs that there was nothing funny on it, I had this kind of panic moment that, oh no, you know, nothing got through the humor meter there. So I decided to throw that all at the cover. So the front cover is a bit comical, and certainly the name of the album, Catman Don't. My brother had come up with that after the, you know, everybody, at least that I know, tends to get stuck with the album title and pass a bunch of things back and forth. And boy, I couldn't even remember some of the alternate takes that we had there. But Catman Don't, some loved it, some hated it, but I've always stuck with that over the last several years in making this one, because to me it was a very memorable, comical title.
Oh, I think it's a purely magic title. You know, obviously it's a play on Kathmandu. But it just a wonderful piece of humor.
Thank you.
Rather than talk about the title and all the rest of it, how would you feel if we played a track? Let's say Souls.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go.
When you think about your love come back, do you stop to think
Okay, I really have two questions, but
sure.
I won't make it difficult. I'll ask them one by one. Is there a story behind that track?
Yeah, there always are. with that song in particular, I was kind of at up in arms with another musician at the time, and I felt like a lot of the work that I'd worked very hard to do, that he was taking advantage of that situation, and rather than try and be destructive about it, it was just the course of events. I figured that I'd grab a musical instrument and try and get some creativity out of it, rather than punching through drywall. So I had come up with that tune then, based off of that, and a lot of songs tend to take a long time to create, and you create them in little bits and pieces, and this is one of those ones that just kind of flew right off of the pen onto the paper, so to speak, and I finished the song very quickly in a day, if I recall correctly, and it's interesting how sometimes your songs can have a little bit of almost fortune-telling or a clairvoyant side to them, in that the song can mean so much to me personally when I write it, and then fast forward a year or two down the line, have another situation in your life occur, and have these very same lyrics have an entirely different meaning on a current, relationship that you're involved with, or a whole different matter. So it's just a nice tune in that it fits in well to many different people's situations.
I'll be honest. I listened to it, and what sprung into my mind was the battle between John Lennon and Paul McCartney. That tune has a very Lennon-esque feel about it. You're grumpy.
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely a sneering vocal quality there for sure.
Okay. I'm sure you've been asked this question before. It's an old, boring question, but who are your musical influences?
With that being a typical boring question, I don't want to give you a typical boring answer, but I'm genuine when I do say that my musical influences are definitely all over the place. One thing that I usually like to describe when people ask that is I always personally put Frank Zappa's music up on the top pillar of my pedestal, and then everything is a good three or four steps below that. And there's plenty of other influences in there. Peter Gabriel comes to mind, the Beatles, certainly. You brought up Lennon and McCartney. I'm a Paul fan myself. I love them all, but I just am in complete awe of his hit-making and songwriting abilities. Ray Davis, same thing. And, I could go on and on with all my influences there. But like I said, Frank Zappa is, for many different reasons, always at the top of that list.
Oh, okay. I can't resist. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you select Zappa?
Oh, why wouldn't I? It would be the better answer. But basically, he astounds me with his ability to write a composition in so many different genres, oftentimes within the same very song. And his ability to articulate what he was trying to get across, be it politically, be it storytelling, be it satire, which he loved. I always felt that he did it very well. And, you know, another joke in there is, that why say something in 3 minutes when you can say it in 27, you know? he had a great way of going on and on with his catalog with that. But to me, every turn that I took was just absolutely mesmerizing.
Okay. I'm going to rephrase the question yet again.
Sure.
Influences are one thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you have some kind of eye thing. It seems like everyone has an eye thing. I mean, who do you listen to when you know, when you're out and about?
Oh, that, you know, I'm definitely big into getting into one particular band and pillaging through their catalog from start to finish, and being completely about that act, that artist, for that time being. And then once I've completely taken everything that I can from that, I move on to the next. So, like this week, for example, I've been ODing on Fishbone and Francis Dunnery, and just been listening to a ton of that. Ryan Adams would be another great example where I spent a good, and I still listen to him, but, you know, I spent a good year of my life just digesting his catalog and really trying to get why he jumped from genre to genre. And what makes each of these people tick, and trying to find something that moves me, and then hopefully moves me to write my own material as well.
Okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to be just like a commercial TV station, and we're going to take a shameless commercial break. Where can people find Katma Don't? And do you have a website, etc., etc.?
Absolutely. They could definitely hit the website at fishersflicker.com. The spelling of my name would be F-I-S-C-H-E-R, fishersflicker.com. That's also available on a present Facebook page, and the CD is available via iTunes as well as Amazon and eMusic.
Music is a strange beast. You know, some people love the excitement of being on stage, that there's magic about live. Others prefer the safety and editing ability of the studio. Where is your comfort level?
If it's fair to answer both, I'll say both, but I'd be guilty of I'd be guilty of favoring the studio. Robert Fripp of King Crimson once said that the difference between playing live and recording in the studio is the difference between a hot date and a love letter. With when you're playing live, just as in a hot date, you don't know what's going to happen. There's spontaneity there. You're taking risks and chances and trying to you know, get a reward out of that. Studio is similar to a love letter in that we have the luxury of erasing that line and making sure that our loved ones don't hear those words, and we rephrase them in ways that we feel best express ourselves. So, because of that, I really love the studio, because I can give birth to my baby to the best of my ability and take my time with it, where live, sometimes when, you know, especially when you're at the mercy of other musicians, if they hit the note that wasn't the intended note, you can't go back and remove that from all of the spectators' ears.
Right. And there's also the issue of you're committed. You're
mm-hmm.
that wrong note. You've still got to work with it.
Right. Yeah, I've heard from blues cats over the years is that, you know, when you hit a wrong note like that, your best bet is to hit that wrong note again and say, yep, that's the one I hit and I meant to do it.
I rather like that definition. Okay, and so it's safe to say you're happier in the studio than on the stage.
Yes, although, you know, both are necessary as a musician, and both to me are fantastic outlets. So, but if I could only take with me one to that desert island we always use in analogies, it would be the studio.
Right. Oh Lord, you said you're only 36 years old,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, obviously you've heard of Desert Island Discs.
Right.
Who else is on the CD? I mean, obviously, it's not just you.
Right. I kind of made a departure with this one in that I did play a lot more on this album, I would say, more so than some of my prior releases. But what I did here, this one would be, that's where Fisher's Flicker comes in, is this one is the closest to a quote-unquote solo album as I've done. And what I did is I pulled from musicians that are almost all alumni members that have played on this CD, other than some guest artists that I had that come in for one track here or there. These are people that have played in the band over the years. So it was really nice to be able to bring some of them along that have been with me on prior releases.
Okay, you're not going to name names?
Okay, well, I can certainly name names. I had Kevin Becker and Steve Langland were the primary rhythm section that I had used throughout the album. And then I had my friends Mike Ducky and Keith Betty come in and lay down a bunch of the guitars. In addition to plenty of the guitars of my own that I had laid down. And then throughout the process, as I developed the live pan, I took on Tim Gavin and Andy Sviacco as my new rhythm section. So they had laid down drums and bass to two of the tracks on the album, as well as continuing to play these things live. And and then I had various other guest stars in there for Tim Kubiak, a guitarist that came in and laid down some guitar, and he's playing now live in the act. And I had violins done by Kathy Starr and backing vocals by a studio client of mine, Ted Clyde, who has a great voice. And I had some pedal steel done by Charlie Cossey and a saxophone solo. Fantastic saxophone solo on You're the Locust, done by David Purdy.
Actually, that is a great segue. would you mind if I played You're the Locust?
I insist.
You insist? Okay. Here it is.
Thank you.
I have listened to this track, I can't tell you how many times, because, you know, I want to put people in pigeonholes. Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, I'm
okay.
A reviewer, I'm an interviewer, and I just have a real issue with this track. It's part, you know, Broadway musical, and then it, you know, it disappears into the blues, and then you come back to the musical aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you intended?
It's kind of a my intention is kind of like a smoky bar, a cocktail bar, and a piano player lamenting his heart and soul out and explaining to the audience, and then it definitely takes a bit of a cosmic journey there and comes back to ground zero. So that's kind of the setting that I had intended.
Composing and production are two very different beasts. I guess I'm going back to my earlier question about live versus studio. What is your way of composing? Do you fiddle around on a piano, an electric keyboard, or what?
Great question. And it's really, truthfully, a little bit of everything. Most of the time, I'm grabbing a piano or a guitar and just getting something that I'm feeling down into music, and usually that's where that carries me. But there's often times that I'll just have a phrase pop into my head, or a melody, a lyrical melody, pop into my head as well, and I'll quickly record them before they get lost in the ether.
Okay, so, you know, you wake up and, you know, here's a musical phrase, just a couple of chords often, I'm assuming, and that's where you start?
Right, for the most part. But like I said, sometimes a phrase will strike me, or I'll read something somewhere, or see something on TV, and just come up, you know, be moved with an idea, and try and work it from there. But more often than not, it's just as you said, where you know, a little ditty or some chords will pop into my head, and I just grab between the guitar and the piano. It's really just what instrument is closest but to my hands, and I'll grab it and work on it until I feel that I've gotten that piece out.
Okay, I'm going to keep on this subject. Which is your favorite, keyboard or the guitar?
Piano, definitely. Keyboards. And that's just a matter of that was really, aside from trombone and in marching band over the years as a child, That was the first instrument that I learned with, was a piano. As a matter of fact, I play guitar incorrectly, you know, not that there's a rule book, but I play it on my lap, similar to the blind deceased guitarist Jeff Healey. He had an excuse that he was blind. My excuse was that I was lazy. I had taught myself how to play guitar off of the piano, and I was writing down the instrumentation for the other musicians in the band, and to figure out the guitar patterns, I had it sitting on my lap while sitting at the piano, so it was just a matter of convenience to have it there on my lap, and unfortunately, it took, and I really cannot play well at all standing upright. I have to play it laying face down or face up on my lap.
Okay. Do you read music?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. lots of musicians play just by ear, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, if you were to show them a sheet of music, they'd go, I don't speak Martian.
right.
Where did you learn to read music?
That goes back and is credited to, you know, when I did learn trombone and it started out with that, I was able to read linear passages, single note passages through the trombone, and then in taking piano lessons. But I was a late bloomer with picking up any of these, you know, more rock-oriented instruments until high school. So I hadn't even taken my first piano lesson until halfway through high school. And at that point, I was, you know, learning to apply that single note progression that I learned with the trombone, applied it to the piano, and was working on chords and multiple hands there, and took all of that, and I've still to this day, you know, have used that often with writing out my music, and I've found some shorthand techniques over the years, more like jazz charts, but definitely big into using music, and I have had musicians over the years in the band that do not read, and they made it by. It's, to me, I don't really care what it takes to get you to play the parts correctly, as long as you're playing the parts correctly, I'm okay with that. But the majority of the musicians that I use certainly read charts.
I'm impressed. You know, there are far too few musicians that actually read music anymore.
I would agree with that, yes.
And I'm being whined out in my ear by my automated nag, so I have to call a halt to this interview. I want to really thank you for taking time out to talk to us this afternoon, and I want to wish you every success with Catman Don't.
Thanks, Simon. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay. I am sure that we will talk again. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe day. I'll be back again soon. Till next time. Goodbye.